I'm Maureen Alcoholic. Is this thing on or is it like a prop? Okay. My sobriety date is September 15th, 2004. So just yesterday I turned 17 years old.
Woohoo.
Where Brad and I got sober, there was all these people that were sober from Texas, and they'd say, by the grace of God and the fellowship of AA, I'm sober today. And so I always want to say that, even though, like, no, I'm not from Texas and whatever. I have gratuitous amounts of codependency and eating disorder as part of my story. I don't have any drugs, unfortunately, or anything. I'm, like, really benign. I didn't start drinking until I was 30. I had so much alcoholism in my family. My dad was an alcoholic, whose dad was an alcoholic, whose dad was an alcoholic. And I think my great-great-grandfather was like a pickle driver. I'm not sure, but there's like some Bostonian folklore that you get like to distract from the alcoholism. You know, it's like, oh no, he was a pickle driver. It's like, who cares? You know, you guys were all reckless drunks. Anyway, so I'm the oldest of four, and I'm the only girl. And I only say that to say that there was an incredible amount of masculinity and just like dick measuring. Is it, can I cuss here? I didn't ask the rules. Okay. You guys don't have any of like the other YPG, like Rocky Horror Picture Show, how it works or whatever. So I'm like, I don't know what this is really. Is this the same thing? So I came up with a very masculine environment, and so I didn't even know what I looked like until I was 37 and like 3 years sober. I didn't even know what I looked like because it was all about, you know, you gotta be wittier, you gotta be faster, you've gotta make it to whatever that is to even be seen. You know, in an Irish Catholic family where there's just all the punches are pulled and everybody's fucked up all the time, it's like you have to be on it. And so that meant for me being sober, absolutely sober. I was sober in high school, sober in college. I was the cigarette smoking, codependent, shit talking. I have the car keys, get in the back seat. I was the oldest sister. I was the pain in the ass forever. My dad got sober when I was 14. By the time that he got sober, I was very aware that he was an alcoholic. I was aware when I was 8 years old. There was just an incredible amount that I had to deal with. And there was an unbelievable amount of violence that I was raised with. And if you're in this room tonight and you haven't done your trauma work, it definitely won't keep you sober. And if you do it at the wrong time, it definitely is hard on your recovery. But I will tell you, when you're ready, it is the best gift that you can give yourself and your loved ones and your recovery is to do your work. I mean, it has been amazing for me. I finally did it this year. And I mean, obviously, you know, I was 16 years sober and I was finally ready to do it. But I didn't realize how many layers I had to unpack there. I mean, just not drinking one day at a time is a huge thing, not to mention going back and looking at all that. Of course, that doesn't make me drink. I drink alcoholically because once I have alcohol in my body, I can't stop drinking. But the amount of violence predicated on somebody who's young, and then you have a brain flooded with cortisol from all the trauma that you've had, there isn't any way. There is no way that you can access the executive function of your brain, make good decisions on a Wednesday. Like, there's no way that you can do any of the things that you need to because you don't have that, you know? So I was very controlled and controlling because all that trauma left me in a place where it was like I had to be in charge of everything. So, of course, you get into, it was also a contradiction. I had to be in control of everything, but I wanted to be a rebel because my dad and all the cop stuff was just too much. So he was very particular and very outspoken. So he was raised by a Bostonian Catholic that everything that wasn't white was a whatever, you know, like every racial epithet. And being a cop, like they just called each other the whatever word instead of their actual name. Like nobody had a name. Like these were the these and these were the those. And I was just like, I know that this isn't okay. I know it's not okay. But everybody would laugh hysterically. So, you know, you didn't know what wasn't okay. I knew it wasn't okay. And I knew that that sort of environment wasn't okay. But what I did know is that Sugar Ray Leonard was the sexiest person I'd ever seen when I was 7 years old. Him and Lando Calrissian were like it for me. And I knew that I didn't care what the these or the those or the racial slurs that my dad used. I knew that I wanted a Lando Calrissian at some point in my future. And that I didn't care if that meant that I would be split up from my family for good, that I was going to have that. That was going to happen for me. And it did. And that lit my whole family on fire. And really, my dad will tell you that, oh, there's a lot of white assholes you could have been with. He never believed that. He believed that I picked the only black asshole to be with. And let me tell you, he was worth it. Barely. But he was worth it. And so this is... I really knew that I had an active eating disorder from like 7 years old until the minute that I met my future ex-husband, and he fixed everything. He fixed everything until he didn't. And so this is from 23 to 30. After my second kid, I'm 222 pounds. I can't function. The codependency stopped working. The diet is like just this crazy cycle. The working out has stopped working. So I go on another crazy diet that says you can have a glass of wine every night. Sidebar, Atkins is before keto, just so you guys know the lineage of this. And Atkins makes keto look like pussies, seriously. And so Atkins was like, yeah, we don't have any packaged food. You guys are gonna have to figure out how to grill a steak and eat broccoli. Like, suck it, figure it out, you know? And so they would say you could have this much wine, you know? And so I'm like, I've never drank wine, and I'm not drinking any sugar, and I'm only having 11 fucking carbohydrates or whatever, and macadamia nuts rolled in cream cheese or whatever kind of crazy shit that they're telling you can have. So I'm going to do this overnight. Overnight. It's a bottle and a half. It's two bottles. I'm blacking out. Overnight. I am 30 years old. I have two kids. I am unprepared physically, medically. I am unprepared psychologically. I don't know how this has just fixed me this fast. I'm not prepared. This looked this made food look like a walk in the park. I was not prepared. Everything that I thought, all the love and adoration, everything I wanted from my husband that he wasn't giving me, I was shocked on what booze did for me and what I didn't need from him anymore. What I didn't need from anything anymore, because booze did it, and it did it perfectly. 4 years of drinking like that, putting my kids to bed drunk, driving with them, all of the things, and I had one of those moments. I was like, you are Paul Thomas Mahoney right now. That motherfucker that you hated, you are that guy. You have got to bring yourself out of that. Now, I've made the fantastic decision of buying my mom's business. Yeah, that was great. 300 and some thousand something at 8% interest. Yeah, that sounds really reasonable. It was not reasonable, but I felt like I needed to do it, and I felt like, and my alcoholism was like, yeah, this is it, you know? You can show your mom, you can take over this. It was so bad. And so that was really where my bottom was. I'm rolling around on this hideous Wild West carpet that we have in this barely remodeled house with my ex-husband in the basement, like crying to my mom, telling her, you know, I can't make these payments. I don't want to do this anymore. And this is on September 14th, 2004. And I realized after that, and I kicked over my glass of wine and my baby cry, whatever moment I was having, and I realized this isn't going to do it. So I had come through the back door. My mom, every year after my dad got sober, she would give us like sort of a, you know, recovery pap smear talk, like, hey, maybe you're going to be an Al-Anon, or maybe you're going to need Alateen, or maybe you're going to be a drug addict. So here's all your programs, and this is what you're going to do. And we were like, yeah, good for you, you know. How's OA working out for you? So we, you know, we didn't pay any of that any mind, because they were the problem. She buckled on her sober seatbelt while his drunk ass drove us home. So this was going to be her problem. She could go to do all the things. We weren't going to do any of the things. But when I was 20, my rage against my dad was so incredible. He had beat me up when I was 18, and it was just hard for me to get over it. And he was sober at this point. He was 4 years sober when that happened. So I went, I took her advice, you know, and I went to Al-Anon, and I did that from 20 to 27. And those women tried to talk me out of getting married, and I was like, no. No, no. I'm going to take him, and you pasty bitches can chill out over here in Al-Anon, and I'm not going to have anything to do with this. I'm going to take my, you know, he was so fabulous. He looked like Alonzo Mourning. Anyway, so I was, at this point, I knew where to go. And so I went to, and I'm kind of emotionally cheating with, like, maybe two people from the gym and one person who's like a repairman at my, and I'm not, there's no touching happening, but I'm definitely not, I'm like, if anybody was doing it to me, I'd be mad, you know, like if anybody was putting the sort of emotional whatever that I was into these three guys, we're going to call it three. So one of them was having trouble drinking. So I thought, well, you know what? I'll go to this meeting with James and him and I will go and it'll be great. And who do I see there is Lorna. I see my Al-Anon sponsor and she's like, yeah, girl, you know, like we've been waiting for you. I'm like, I didn't even drink when we were working together, you know? And she's like, the writing was on the wall. And I went to meetings with him for, I don't know, about a month. And I would come late and leave early, and finally after about 5 weeks, this guy comes and he corners me, and he's like, listen, don't fuck around in here. If you want this, you can help people. If you don't. But don't bring this guy in here, because this guy was like, you know, he's the first up on the Hot Mess Express, you know, like this is where you go to like make all your bad decisions before you go make the rest of the decisions. So he knew that. And I'm thinking this guy's like some angel from Northern California who's just like popped into this meeting. Where Brad and I got sober, it was like three stories of like, it should have been like the lack of wellness would start at the bottom, but it wasn't. It was like the cream, and I mean like the shit of the cream rose. So by the time you got to the third floor, it's like all smoking. There's this 8:30 meeting, and I would call it love, patience, and parolees because everybody was on paper, but me and like two other housewives. And I was only there so I could come home and smell like cigarettes and like smoke the whole time. So I knew that this was specific to me. Now, of course, the longer I've been sober, this guy's like how I am. Like, listen, girl, I don't care what you want to do in the halfway house or whatever, but you can't do it here. And so, you know, move it along and we'll see you in your short shorts in, you know, 7 years or whenever you're ready. But I took it as real advice. And I got a sponsor. And I picked her out by the back of her head, which is what you should do. And she was 10 years younger than me. She was a lesbian. She was from New York. She was a heroin addict, but wanted to get sober in AA. We had nothing in common. She was perfect. She was perfect. She loved the book. She loved the steps. She didn't give a shit that I was a mom. So she would constantly say, like, I don't care. I don't care who puts those guys to bed. You need to go to a meeting. You need to do this. You need to do whatever. And I was like, oh, you know, oh, I'm all important. I'm a business owner and a mom. She's like, you are a drunk. You are a nobody. You need to put this thing first or it will get you. And thank God for that, because now, like, I see the number of women who've had people just sort of coddle them through because they had children. Like, that was a bigger priority than their recovery. How ridiculous is that? How many people do you know with postpartum depression or cancer that, like, they get, you know, all sorts of credit for whatever their ailment is, and they get to take care of that instead of taking care of their kids? Whereas those of us that have alcoholism as a problem, it's like shame for us to go to meetings or to do whatever we would need to do. So I really, like, all diseases are at parity for me. There isn't, you can't come to me and I don't care what you, I'm going to hurt a bunch of feelings and I don't care. I don't care about your COVID. I don't care about your cancer. I don't care about your fibromyalgia. I don't care about any of it. I don't care about any of it, because this disease and its stigma, until it is given the credit that it is deserves and its weight as a disease, and that we actually have something, you put a PET scan on our brain, you will see that we're different. I don't care. I do not care, because you can't say that that's more important than me, and you can't say it's more important than my recovery, and you can't say what I've had to do is more important for my family than this, because it isn't. So we do the work, and where Brad and I got sober, there was this crazy contingency of people that went through the work every year. They were called the God Squad, and they were nuts. And my sponsor was one of them. I liked her, but her sponsor was unchained. She was crazy. And so she says to Lisa, well, now it's time. Like, I guess this is how it happens with, like, the Klan or whatever. Like, well, now it's time, you know. And so it's like, you need to go buy a 1939 dictionary, and we're going to go through the work again. No, we're not. Not me. I'm not going to do that. I wanted to live in 10, 11, and 12. So I found this great group. And it was, okay, it wasn't a great group, but it had one good guy. And this good guy would attract all these other people to come. No, seriously, the treasurer had to die in order for me to get a service position. It wasn't a great group. Everybody that was there was just, like, there because they, you know, they'd gone there forever. But Roger had my heart the very first meeting. He had, at this point, 25, 27 years of recovery. And the night before, he'd held his 41-year-old son to die in his arms to do in-house hospice for cancer. That was it. I was done. He said, the most important thing is for me to be here tonight. I was forever in love with AA at that point. This man taught me that I was God's daughter and that I was always God's daughter. I said, well, you know, when I was drinking, I was a piece of shit. He goes, that is the lie of your alcoholism. You were never a piece of shit. You were always God's daughter. And the gifts that this guy gave me. He was this crazy talk with food in his mouth, eating egg salad. It made you never want to eat egg salad or food ever again. Meet me at the deli, whatever. And I'd be like, I'm running my own business and I've got two kids, but I'll come to the deli. And him and this other guy, now at this point, they've got however many years sober, and Roger literally sponsors like 35 people from Colorado to California and back. Like, he sold buttons or thread or I don't know, something. So he's on this like wacky, you know, 1970 sales route where he like sells whatever. And people literally would come and wait. We'd struggle through terrible pie and even worse meetings to just be around Roger and to get 5 minutes of his counsel, or, you know, for even to just hear whatever he was doing. And the beliefs that he had and the things that he gave me. So the main reason why I sought after him is I was going through a divorce. So spoiler alert, that sexy whatever marriage, that was a non-starter. But I made it work. It really should have been over at 3 weeks, and I got 13 years out of it. So can't blame me for trying, right? You know? And two gorgeous, gorgeous kids that are so awesome. And I needed what Roger had in terms of, like, he was so sure about the steps. He would say, yeah, I don't know. I sponsor a lot of doctors. I don't know anything about medicine, but I know the 11-step works on everything. And that was like the kind of stuff that was like, oh, yeah, I think you're right, you know? And then he'd say other stuff about relationships. Well, you're just a worm looking for the other end of your tail. I'd drive around literally for days. So I'd meet with him on a Tuesday, and then like every day I'd be like, I'm a worm. What does that mean? What is my tail? Is that the other guy? Is he an ass and I'm an ass? Or we're like, or like you cut a worm and it goes and finds itself? What do we, and so I mean, and so I don't know if he did that as like a Jedi mind trick. So like I wouldn't be thinking about booze, or I wouldn't be thinking about the divorce. And all I'd be thinking about is I'm a worm looking for the under my tail. But it worked. And to this day, I think about the stuff that he would say and just like walk away from, and thank God for that. Because it's made me the same sort of uncanny and not specific sponsor and spiritual advisor where I just say things and like, well, you can figure that out later. He died sober and with, I think, 38 years of sobriety. And I was in Florida at the time when he passed away, and I missed his memorial ceremony, but that changed the quality of my recovery. He believed that in 10, 11, and 12, you could work that every day. He taught me to pray the 11th step of my, to pray my 11th step from the third column of my inventory. So he would say, what you really did in your relationships were you gave your self-esteem away. You gave your ambition away. You gave your security away. What you can do is ask God for a genuine sense of self-esteem. Ask God for a genuine sex ideal. You can pray that in your 11th step. And it was, I've still never heard anything like that. I mean, as long as I've been sober and as many speaker meetings and whatever, I've never heard that advice ever given before. And it really was awesome for me because it took me out of this place where it's I had to be perfect with meditation or I had to be perfect with whatever. Because again, these God Squad guys writing everything down, you know, well, you gotta, because there's some line in the 12 and 12 about like what gets written down. And so that turned out to be literal papal advice that you had to follow to the T in order to pass through the eye of the needle or whatever. And I wasn't having any of that because I knew that it wasn't true. And the other thing is I wanted to help other women like I'd been helped. And I knew that that wasn't going to happen being a specific pain in the ass. I knew that that wasn't going to happen. I should say this. I met my ex-husband when I was 23. I didn't really do very much out in the world sexually. So I did everything that I wanted to. I heard a speaker, and at this point I'm like been divorced for however long, and his name was Tom C. from California. And he said, I fucked my way through my first 7 years of recovery. Would I suggest it? No. But did I stay sober? Yes, I was like 7 years making, like, I think I can do that. Ironically, the sponsor that I attracted after the heroin addict was a hippie who was celibate for 13 years. So, and I found her from an Abundance water bottle. That was the best part about her. And so she had nothing that I needed in terms of anything that I was going through. But she gave me one nugget, which is if I'm fighting, I'm fighting booze. I thought that was like the most reductionist piece of shit advice ever. But it turned out to be true, because whenever I am fighting, I'm fighting my lower nature, and I'm fighting my old coping mechanisms, and I'm fighting the things that I actually know. Because like Brad was saying, that's what we do. We drink in front of people. We treat our alcoholism with booze. That's what it looks like. So I was so blessed to be in this place, to have that little lesson from her, to have a woman that I had met in a women's meeting that I was going to, which, by the way, I would have rather ate my own liver. But I had like three sponsees that went there. So I was like, yes, I will meet you at 5:30 on Sunday. Like the worst time ever. But Sarah went to this meeting and she had 30-some years sober. She got sober really young. And it sounded like she had just terrible relationships. So I went and met her for lunch. And I said, well, I'd like a sponsor that has relationship experience. She actually like spit her lunch out laughing. She's like, yeah, I have a lot of relationship experience and it's terrible. I'm like, I know. And I would love all of the things that you've got in terms of experience. Sarah was so great. And I said, well, the main reason why I'm coming to you as I have this 150 person sex inventory that I'm sitting on, and I need to be able to fifth step it with somebody. She goes, let me get back to you. She talks to her sponsor and she comes back. She goes, well, as much as I thought you were pre-qualified as a candidate for SLAA, I've decided that we'll go ahead and move forward because you put your honesty first. And I know how many women that you sponsor, and I know how important your home group is, and I know what you do in your recovery. So let's go ahead and do it. Sarah was my sponsor, and she still is one of my best friends to this day. How much time do I have? Okay. 7 minutes. I can do this. So I moved down here. So Sarah and I did lots of best life stuff. Like, it was like she wanted to move the mountains, and I don't know why. And I wanted to move to Florida. She didn't know why. But it was great because neither one of us wanted anything that was the same, but we really helped each other a lot with all of those goals. And we walked probably almost 3 times a week. And I was telling Taylor and Allie in the car, I was single-ish. And I really was. Like, I didn't have anybody consistently sleeping in my bed, but I'm sure the universe was like, pass, pass, pass. She didn't know, pass, pass, pass. And I would get really distraught about being single and that I couldn't meet anybody and that it was always going to be shit and that it was always going to suck. And then I would go back to that feeling of walking with Sarah and how effortless it was and how perfect it was and how easy it was. And actually, the relationship that Brad and I have is really the same. I mean, him and I ran this dumpster fire of a meeting for week after week after week. I mean, we were like trying to fix and flip this thing that it was so bad. Again, like 6:30 on a Sunday night. Who's gonna come, you know? Every Bronco fan, whatever. So I was really, really clear that this best life type of sponsorship was what I wanted, and that I wanted to work with women that weren't just content with not drinking, but that they wanted to be on fire to help other alcoholics, and they wanted to see more in their recovery than just marginal amounts of whatever it was in their job or in their life or in their marriage or in whatever, that they really wanted best life. So it happened. I got married, remarried, as I call my pink husband. And when I met him, I said, listen, I'm not really about all this Colorado stuff. So if you're down for whatever, that's cool, but I'm not gonna stay here. He's like, well, I don't know. He's a Pisces. He's all over the place. He's like, I can only live in Colorado. And then he's like, sure, I'll go whatever you want. So he went to Miami a couple times. He's like, and you know, if you can get somebody to fall in love with Miami, that it's like they'll live anywhere in Florida. So he came down here a couple times. He's like, yes, I will do it. And I didn't know, because I had, at this point, my son's 14 and my daughter's 17, and I didn't know that, I knew that for sure they weren't going to move with me. And I knew that my ex-husband would throw a fit. Not like he cared. He hadn't been taking care of them for 4 years. That's a totally other speaker meeting. But he, but I knew that he wouldn't just let me take them down anyway. So we pulled angel cards every day. And every day, the ocean, the ocean, the ocean. You guys have that Dorian Virtue deck that you've used to all the gold edges off. Ocean, ocean, ocean. Paris one day gets so pissed off because he's not really sure if he wants, you know, to move down here. He goes, these aren't my angels. These are your fucking angels, and throws the angel cards at me. I'm like, okay. I tell my mom the story. She sends a deck from whatever, another non-program approved person. And she, these are really hardcore angels. To this day, Paris's angels will cut you. That's my husband's name. And, but the same thing. They're like, instead of these like soft, you know, Stevie Nicks on a horse type of angels that are mine, these are like, you know, these are really tough. They're tough. And they're still like, go. You guys leave Florida. Still, the readings are exactly the same. So he got on board 100%. We've lived down here now for the last 7 years, almost 7 years, 6 years. Amazing. I wanted to live in a place where my sobriety and what I knew about the steps and what I knew about recovery could be shared and could be worked on. And oh my, it's just so awesome. The life beyond your wildest dreams, or if I sat and made a boring list and told you all about it, you would think that I was whatever. All of that stuff happened, and I'm really grateful that I get asked to speak when I don't want to, drive up to Tampa, which makes me totally whacked out because I don't know anything but, you know, Brad here. And but I'm grateful because this thing works in rough going, I'm still God's daughter. I still can't drink one day at a time, but that best life stuff is really real. And my best life just keeps going and going and going. I have a lot of things adversarially. My 21-year-old son turns out that he is one of us. He was down here for 10 months trying to get clean. It didn't. He was like, I'm not interested. Leaves a used bag of cocaine on our table and fuck you and I'm out. As hard as that is, I still am so grateful. I'm still so grateful because I am light years ahead of all these other women in Naranon who don't have any of the tools. They have none of the tools because from working with countless alcoholics that have been so gracious to ask me to do the steps with them or to, you know, just even be in their presence, I have so much grace around this, and I do understand today that it's a disease. This is a disease, and we are lovable whether we are sober or not. We are lovable whether we are clean or not. We are lovable regardless. So that is my message, is that it's like, yes, the easier, softer way for me is being clean and sober today. But that being said, you know, when we're dealing with others, we're lovable regardless. Thanks.